And we had talked about before the kind of the different approaches of Tehillim and Mishlei. That Tehillim tends to argue Gamzu L'Tova. When we're looking at Tzadik V'Ra'leh, why do bad things happen to good people? It's saying, well, eventually things will work out. Mishlei generally says that everything's deserved. There is justice. Something goes wrong, it's deserved. Tzadik will not suffer, period. And both those are approaches that can be useful. There's no single answer to that. And then Mishle says in Pasuk Vav, Brachot l'rosh tzaddik, blessings will come to the on the head of the righteous. Upi rishaim yachas, and the mouth of the wicked will be covered with violence. They will see reap the rewards of their violence. They will be end up in violence. And zecher tzaddik l'bracha, and the righteous will be remembered for good, and we quote this all the time. We use that expression, Zechat Tzadik, talk about people who passed away. Rishaim Rishaim Yirkav, in the name of the wicked, will be ruined, rotted, destroyed. So Meshle ends up in the same kind of place that Tehillim ends up. When we looked at that, when it said Nari Tigam Zakanti, it's in Tehillim, we pointed out that parak ends with Acharit Lish Shalom, that there's a future, the man of peace, that eventually things will work out. And here, Mishle is kind of saying the same thing. Zecher Tzadik L'Bracha, remembered for good. That part of the answer to Tzadik V'Ra'leh is that in the long run, the Tzadik will be successful. And the final reward for this Tzadik is their Zecher, how they're remembered. Malm says, well, that here in Source 31, Yesh Hevdel Ben Shem Ben Zecher. It's different between what, when it says Shem Rishaim Yirkav, the name of the wicked, and the Zecher, how they're remembered, the memory. Hashem Hashem Atzmi. Shem, he says, refers to their essential name, who they are while they're living. But Zecher Mora Mashem Azkirim Oto Adei Ma'aseh V'Asher Asah. And Zecher, memory, refers to how they're remembered afterwards, about the things that they did. Tzadik Gam Zecher Zechro Omed Levracha. And for Tzadik, that his memory will stand, will last as a blessing. He has kiru ma'asav b'chol dor, because they'll remember him in all generations, future generations, v'yivarcheihu, and they'll bless him. V'Hashem gam shemam yirkav. It says the Rasha will, their shame, their fame will be ruined. Sh'lo levad she'ein even it, more than just they're not remembered later. Gam shemam batzmam yirkav, that they will be completely lost. V'yechulah ki ein lehem hashra'a nafshit o'mini. That there will be no remnant of the Rishayim, either spiritual or minit in terms of the species. They will have no offspring. They will not survive. And Kohelet, the Midrash Kohelet Rabbah, kind of uses this expression about the zecher versus shame, who you are and how you remembered. He uses the same word shame as name, but it says, Tani, Shlosha Shemot Nikru Ladam. A person has three names in their life and after. Echad shekoru lo aviv imo, one the name they named at birth. Echad shekoru lo acherim, and one that others call him. The way you're known when you're alive. Echad shekoru lo b'sefer toldot briato, and then there's the shame, the way you're called in your obituary, in your biography, how you're remembered. And this is from an essay by Tai Bennett, who's a motivational speaker. He's quoting David Brooks. Talks about this concept. David Brooks, in an editorial titled "The Moral Bucket List," developed the concept that there are two sets of virtues: the resume virtues and the eulogy virtues. That's what he's saying, but between zecher and shem, what's on your resume, and what's in your eulogy. Resume virtues are skills you bring to the marketplace. The eulogy virtues are the ones that are talked about at your funeral. Both types of virtues are important and worth pursuing and honing, but only eulogy virtues have any lasting value and delicacy. Developing resume virtues is fairly straightforward. You read more books, you practice, you develop skills, and you get more education. Developing usually eulogy virtues act as clear-cut, involves a lifetime of making good decisions and prioritizing things of lasting value. So Zecher Tzadik L'Bracha is saying that the Tzadik's eulogy values will last forever. And then with all of this, he's not talking about Chochmah, which the first book of Mishlei did, even talking about Tzaddik, one who's righteous. And then Pasuk Chet, he goes back and ties them together. It says, Chacham Lev, the wise person, Yikach Mitzvot, will take Mitzvot. That's what makes them a Chacham, is that they're Mitzvot. Vavil Svatayim Ilavet, and that's an unusual word, but the Avil is the foolish person. The foolish person, Ilavet, the Malbim explains that is Me'ini Yigia Lelo Toelt, will work with no purpose, with no outcome. Chacham will do things that have value, that's the mitzvot, and the fool will waste his time. It may work hard, but nothing that will have any lasting impact.
That's also, that's also the frustration of the of Jews in Egypt, that they were given work that wasn't meaningful.
Yes. So that's the implication here, that the idea of mitzvot are things that actually are meaningful, that there is some point to them. The Avil isn't forced to do the work that's pointless. That's just what they choose to do. That's the definition of being a fool in Mishle's eyes. If you're smart, you'll be a tzaddik, you'll do mitzvot. And Professor Grintz from Tel Aviv University is he was the, I think, the first head of Tanakh at Tel Aviv University. There was an essay on Mishle, talks about the difference between mitzvot as in the terms that Mishle uses them and mitzvot in the Torah. Mitzvot in the terms that Mishle uses them is something what we call mishpatim. They're really not religious, they're ethical mitzvot. Nimsa harav. That it seems that even though there's a great similarity, from the Musar, from the ethical lessons in the Torah and the Nevi'im, on one hand, Uben Musar HaChokhmah, Kifishu B'Sefer Mishlei, Mizeh, and the way Musar and Chokhmah, phronesis, in Aristotle's term, acting correct, acting in the right way, knowing what how to do it and acting that way, as described in Mishlei, on the other hand. And they are definitely similar. Yesh Hevdel Chashuv, Misgeretu Minimukim. There's a great difference in the definition and the details. Mever Mizeh, on the one hand, yesh lanu b'Torah hanamaka musarit datit lumit. On the Torah side, the rules, the Musar, is specifically religious and national. It is specific to the Jews. It's aimed at Jews. Mizeh, say for Mishlei, on the other hand, in Mishlei, hanamaka musarit datit ishit, that the ethical rules are religious, we echo back to Hashem, but is universal. It's about being human. They're much more humanistic. Sefer Mishlei, yesh lanu gam pa'amim rabot, hanamaka to'alanetit. Look that one up. And Mishlei, they certainly are utilitarian, practical rules that say, okay, if you do this, things will be good. But that's not mandatory in most of Mishlei's rules, but yesod l'chol musar, and the basis for Mishlei's morality, hu gam kan Moshe Marla Mala, it's what we've said in his article here, he said before, it's Yirat Hashem, based on what we call fear of God. And that is not something that's directly commanded by God. It's not related to revelation. We'll see what Yirat Hashem means. It's the acknowledgement that there is a higher power. The Torah yesh lanu Torat Elyon. The Torah, there is the Torah from on high. That's of revelation. Mishlei Torat HaChokhmah. Mishlei really is something that's a simply coming from Chokhmah, from wisdom that one can figure out. Kitzu b'zeh. And there's a similar distinction that we see between Sefer Mishlei and the morality that's expressed by the Nevi'im. Unlike what we see in all the Sefer Nevi'im, Mishlei here never talks about the uniqueness of Israel. Nothing's ever addressed to the Jews. There is nothing here about Tzion, nothing about Yerushalayim, al tzibi al acharit yamim, or nothing about waiting for Mashiach. Shum devar lo nemar, gam biyachas the Torah Moshe, and we never mention the Torah that Moshe gave, v'al brit am, or a brit, or a mikdash, nothing about the brit mikdash, none of that, nothing about serving Hashem. Again, these are universal rules. Arekabas Hifreinu, the background of our book, v'rekah shel munah b'Hashem, it involves believing God, yirat Hashem, and fearing, having awe of God. Shel Sifrei Mikra b'Asher Hem, it's similar to the other books in that sense. Well, Misgirati Musar, but the definition of morality, Kamor Shon, as we said, is different. Musar Ishi, it is human, Amoni Klal Olami, and universal. These are the mitzvot, so that when Mishle talks about Hashem and mitzvot, it's in the context of Yirat Hashem, which has a very specific meaning. And when we see this idea, we're using Torah is using Yirat Elokim. And it's interesting that the context of that expression, for instance, when Abraham goes to Abimelech and he says, Sarah is my sister, and Abimelech says, no, she's not. And he cried Abimelech, Abraham, Abimelech called Abraham, Vayomer, lo, and Abimelech says to him, Ma'asita lana, what did you do to us? Ma'chatati lach, what did I sin against you? Ki veta alive, amalachi, lamachi chata agadola. You caused me and my kingdom to sin terribly. You did things that should not be done. So Abimelech asked Abraham, what do you see that you did this? You said she's my sister. And Abraham says, because I said, Rak ein yirat elokim. There is no yirat elokim here. And I thought they're going to kill me for my wife. There was an expectation of yirat elokim that he was afraid was not being met. Similarly, when Yosef sees his brothers, and Yosef's the viceroy of Egypt, brothers don't recognize him, and he accuses them of being spies, so he is acting as Safnapaneach, the viceroy of Egypt. They don't know that he's Jewish, that he is one of Bnei Israel, and Vayesofa Tamil Yishmar Shal Yashal Yamim, and he puts him in jail for 3 days. Yomar Alehem, Yosef Yomar Shlishi, and on the third day, Yosef tells them, Zod asu v'chiyo, you should do this and live. You'll bring the food back to your family. Et Elokim ani yarei. I have Yirat Elokim. That's why I'm letting you go. Similarly, in the beginning of Parshat Shemot, Paro tells the midwives to kill the baby boys. And he tells, Vayomar b'yachet yivriot, when you help the Hebrews give birth, we tell them nine, you look on the birthing stones and the birth room, in Ben Huva may ten oto, if it's a boy, kill it. In Bathi Bahaya, but a girl you can let live. But Tirena Haimildot Elokim. And the midwives had Yirat Elokim living in Egypt. They didn't do what the king of Egypt said, but they helped the boys live. Even more striking when it's describing Amalek. Mitzvah of Zechirat Amalek. Zechorat Asher Aselach Amalek. You have to remember what Amalek did. Baderach B'tzeitchem Mitzrayim when you were leaving Egypt. Sher Korchor Baderach, who encountered you along the way, Ve'ezenev Bacha, Kol Nechashalim Acharecha, and tailed after you and took out those who were straggling. Batayef B'yageya, and you were exhausted and miserable. Below Yarei Elokim, and Amalek was not Yarei Elokim. He did not have Yirat Elokim. And all these cases is talking about non-Jews. They're not part of Bnei Israel, and they're expected to have Yirat Elokim. That's a good thing. Because this is what we call Derech Eretz. Basically, it's what everyone should have. Now, Shlomo here is talking to Jews, so he uses a personal name, Yudkei Vavkei Levi. He doesn't call it Elokim. But the mitzvot, again, are the universal ones. Don't go killing baby boys. All right? And in some of those cases, it's going to be over and over. Be honest. Be good to those who are less fortunate. And he's saying that you still need a sense of commandness. The wisdom is to have a mitzvot, that they have to be commanded. There has to be some sense of Yirat Hashem, of some absolute source of moral authority. You try to figure out your own ethics. Use your own reasoning. You're not going to end up with Mishpatim. You're going to end up in what I've called before the repugnant conclusion, in a very bad place. And this Rabbi Lichtenstein says, argues that, at least in part, that you need the idea of a mitzvah and Yirat Elohim in order to be a chacham and be a tzaddik. That one could
So
argue.
the non-Jews also
Yeah, that is exactly his argument. Okay, that is the argument that you need not necessarily revelation of Torah, but the sense that there is some absolute source of moral authority. It says one could argue that morality without religion in the sense of there is a source, there is an absolute morality, the power there that says this is right, this is wrong. That is inconceivable. A position succinctly summarized by Ivan Karamazov in Dostoevsky's novel, right? In the Brothers Karamazov. Without God, everything is lawful. This claim is made on a philosophical plane. Others, however, I think he's sympathetic to this, that argue from a practical standpoint. That you can't say logically, philosophically, we have to conclude that without God, everything is lawful, but as practically, even if conceptually goodness can exist independently of a religious outlook, on a practical level, a person or society can arrive at morality only through religion. And that, I think, is Shlomo's argument. You can only start with Yirat Hashem in order to get anything resembling tzedakah. And so that's why he says, Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvot. Wise will take this idea of a mitzvah and apply it. That will make them a tzaddik. And then the next pasuk goes in looking at exactly what it is to be a tzaddik. And he says, Holech betam, yilech betach. Someone who walks in really simplicity without trying to fool anybody, in honesty, will be secure, will go in safety and security. Makesh drachav yivadea. But someone who is perverted in their ways, yivadea literally means will become known. And how does he translate here? Who you that perverts his ways shall be found out. And this is kind of what we talked about last time, that we need to understand the parallelism, because it's not parallel. They're saying different, they're not contrasting, right? Olech betam, walking straight, is parallel with Makesh derachav, the one who perverts his ways, but Yelech Betach will be secure, and Yivadea becomes found out, are very different things. Both parts may be true, they're good messages, but they're not parallel. Right? So you can say that one whose path is crooked will be discovered, that makes sense, and that you can try to be tricky, but you'll not be able to hide your evil plans. But again, it doesn't go with this walk securely, Yelech Betach. So Rashi translates Yivadea with a more obscure meaning of that root of Yud Dalet Aleph. So it's Rashi here, Makesh Rechav Yivadea, Yishaver, will be broken, Yitaser, and will be tortured, tormented. And he brings a proof from Shoftim when Gideon conquers the Midianim. He took the elders of the city by Yodabahem, and he tormented them. Sukkot, along with the people of Sukkot. So then it fits better that someone who is righteous will be secure, and someone who's perverted in their ways will be tormented. They'll suffer. And then Shlomo changes it to a completely different message. It says, "Kretz ayin yitein atzvut." Kretz ayin yitein atzvut. They translate here as "who winks an eye causes sorrow." Ve'vil, and we've had that word lilavet, and someone who's a fool, we quoted that, will suffer. Will work for no purpose. Which is different ayin. Yeah, what does that do with winking and avil svatayim, foolish in the lips and chattering? And here, also, the parallelism is different from what we said before. It's not contrasting. Most of the parallelism, this is good, this is bad. Or this is bad, this is good. Here, both of them are the same. They're not antithetical, they're complementary. Both of them are bad. Don't be koretz ayin, don't be winking, and don't be nevil svatayim, don't be foolish in your speech. So I would read this as kind of a stepping back, going back to that central metaphor. This is all about dad lecturing the kids. All right, Shmar b'nei b'mosar avicha. What was the beginning of this perek? Was your ben chacham yisamach av, the wise son makes the father happy. And I would translate koretz ayin as rolling the eyes. All right, talking. Dad's lecturing again, kid just rolling his eyes. So now the dad's stopping his lecture and saying, look, rolling your eyes, you're just going to end up being yitein at seven, we'll end up in misery. And if you just keep chattering, you will fail. So if you don't listen, you're going to regret it. And someone's reminding us of that too. Keep paying attention. And then we get back to this concept we had before, again, that the tzaddik, through tzidkut, through the righteous, people will live, and through the evil, they will die. They'll suffer. It says, "Makor chayim pi tzaddik," the mouth of a tzaddik is a source of life. "Upi rasha'im," and the mouth of the wicked, "yechaseh hamas," is covered in violence. And we had said that before. We started out saying, "Birchot rosh tzaddik," the bracha for the head of the righteous, "upi rasha'im yechaseh hamas," same phrase. The mouth of the wicked will be covered in violence. But here, instead of talking about what happened to the Rasha, it's telling about the result. So you listen to a tzaddik, the words of the tzaddik, pi tzaddik, that'll be source of life. The mouth of the Rasha, even if it sounds positive, it's yichaseh hamas, conceals violence. And it'll end up bad. And then he says, "Sinat to arer medanim," hatred awakens strife, argument. "Balkum v'she'im techase ahava," and love will cover all sins. And that's the idea, that not just that, well, if you hate somebody, you're going to argue with them. If you love them, you won't. But that it affects how we interpret the world around us. Hatred means we're going to look at everything in a negative sense. And this was a lovely piece by Scott Alexander, who I quoted before. He's a psychiatrist who has a blog. A lot of stuff about science, lots about psychiatry, but here he's talking about him getting married. And it's very sweet. They started talking out about bad relationships. And the idea is that you're in a terrible relationship, your partner's giving you ample reason to hate them. But now you just don't hate them when they abuse you. Now even something as seemingly innocent as seeing them eating crackers, for some reason this is his image here, makes you actively angry. In theory, interaction with your partner, where they just eat crackers and don't bother you in any way, ought to produce some habituation. The tiny piece of evidence they're not always that bad. Something completely neutral. But in reality, just made you hate them worse. At this point, your prior assumptions that go into evaluating evidence, and I look at what you're doing, you're priming them being bad is so high that every single interaction, regardless of how it goes, will make you hate them more. But anything else to see, oh, they're not doing anything that bad, you'll see it and look at that's just awful. They're eating crackers, they're getting crumbs everywhere, they're making too much noise. And it becomes every single thing you see becomes proof of how terrible they are and makes you hate them more. Your prior that they're bad has become trapped. It colors every aspect of your interaction with them, so even interactions which, out of context, are perfectly innocuous, feel nightmarish on the inside. For some reason, neither Ozzy, a friend of his who's talking about this, nor I ever wondered about the opposite phenomenon. Is it possible to like someone so much that the positive emotion builds on itself, grows stronger and stronger with every interaction until it's one of those blue supergiant stars in the galactic core? He's a geek. I like that. So, just to ask the questions to answer it. I've seen lots of couples in this position. Again, you're trapped prior that your partner is wonderful. So everything you see just is obviously just more proof of their wonderfulness. Not all, maybe not even most, but some family members, some friends. And after 2 years of dating my now wife, I could viscerally sense the possibility. Like a slope, I'm just beginning to roll down, gathering speed as I go. And so that's what love covers all sins, because now you're looking at it in a positive sense. Now it becomes more proof of how wonderful the other person is, and you love them even more. So it becomes a virtuous cycle, or sin becomes a vicious cycle. And the bigger lesson that Shlomo was telling us is that your prior assumptions can get trapped. you lose the ability to change your own opinions or change your mind. So be careful, be aware when that's happening. Make sure you know what your assumptions are when you're interpreting what other people are doing. And then he continues, "B'sifte Navon, the words of the wise, Simse Chachma, you'll see wisdom. B'shevet Lagav, Chaser Lev, and a rod on the back, a cane on the back, whip it, on a whipping Chaser Lev for the one who is foolish, who's lacking a heart." Lacking a mind. And here again, the parallelism is hard to find. So Rashi says that the wisdom you're finding in the words of the Navona, of the ones who have understanding, is talk to, if you're smart, you'll admit when you're wrong. As opposed to the Shevet Lagav, you have to whip the foolish in order for them to admit that they're wrong. This is Rashi. Hey, Navon Timseh Chachma. When someone rebukes a Navon, someone with understanding, he'll answer, "You're right, I was wrong." Gon David, and the classic example of that is when he tells Natan, "Chatati," with Bathsheba. Don't deny it. Lagav chaser lev, someone who's lacking understanding, eno shomea, won't listen to rebuke, achi lakeh, until they're beaten. Kmo Paro. So that read the pasuk as parallel, but with this elicit with its with the key phrase elided, eliminated, omitted. That on the lips of the smart you find wisdom, and the cane of the foolish you can also find wisdom. To learn that lesson, admit when you're wrong. And the next pasuk is Chachamim Yismudat, though the wise will gather, will hide, will gather their knowledge via mechate korva, and the mouth of the foolish will bring ruin and destruction by not admitting fault. And so then Shlomo concludes this section. The summary goes back to the beginning. Beginning started out with talking about wealth and property and how Hashem will give bracha to those who are righteous, but you still have to work, and the balance between hishtadlut and emunah. And he ends with the wealth, the possessions of the wealthy are a tower of strength, but the poverty of the poor, those are different words, the poverty of the indigent is their destruction. You need the wealth. Money can't bring happiness, but poverty is miserable. So we're promised that Hashem will reward the tzaddik. So the work of the tzaddik will end up in life, but to what rasha, the produce of being evil is lachatat, is simply to sin more. That's the continually doing work, the tilavet, and end up with no result, no outcome. You're just working for nothing at all. So that's where dad's telling the kids, stop rolling your eyes, work hard, be honest, and you'll do well in life. And that is the bottom line. Hopefully, the kids will learn that too. I'm going to stop here.
Ah.